You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is In Theory. I'm Chris in Glasgow from Scotland.
Well, a Scotsman clad in kilt left the bar one evening fair, and one could tell by how he walked that he'd drunk more than his share. He fumbled round until he could no longer keep his feet, and he stumbled off into the grass to sleep beside the street. Ring ding diddle diddle idio, ring da diddly io. He stumbled off into the grass to sleep beside the street. About that time, two young and lovely girls just happened by. One says to the other with a twinkle in her eye, "See yon sleeping Scotsman, so strong and handsome built. I wonder if it's true what they don't wear beneath the kilt." Ring ding diddle diddle idio, ring da diddly io. I wonder if it's true what they don't wear beneath the kilt. They crept up on that sleeping Scotsman quiet as could be, lifted up his kilt about an inch so they could see, and there, behold, for them to view beneath his Scottish skirt was nothing more than God had graced him with upon his birth. Ring ding diddle diddle idio, ring da diddly io, was nothing more than God had graced him with upon his birth.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska.
On a long and lonesome highway east of Omaha, you can listen to the engine moaning out his one note song. You can think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before.
Believe it or not, I did not tell James he couldn't say something just as we were starting to record. I kind of miss that, James, you know, when I say, okay, go ahead and go, and then poof, you go into something, some tangent that you thought of just now. You know, just like I'm doing.
Yeah, we've had a lot of tangents just before we pressed the record button.
Yeah, but I like it when it, you know, after we press the record button, you know, I speak Spanish. So
if people do want to hear my, you know, three things wrong with the U.S. political system, you know, please get in touch on at TNG Rewatch on Twitter, and I'll be very grateful to send this across to them.
Yes, what he's saying, one of them is he doesn't understand how Republicans could be so Democratic and Democrats be for the Republic. I don't know. So, Chris, geez, we haven't had you on in...
weeks.
What?
Oh, one of them.
A whole bunch of days.
It's not even a week.
Yeah, no, it was Thursday. So, and the fact that we were able to record 2 weeks in a row is just astonishing. So, I still haven't heard back from Brian yet about redemption. So, let's hope he'll be there. He'll be available.
Yeah, because that's completely set. Yeah,
it's next week.
The entire season would have a guest on it if he turns up.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Lou, are we going back to back redemption? Or are we doing part one and then picking up part two at a later date?
I think that's a bad idea. I think we should at least do it, if not one, part one on a Wednesday and part two on a Thursday. You go back week to week, you know, different dates, you kind of mess up. You kind of forget what last one was about. I wish we could do it the way we used to of, two on the same day that we could just hit, stop recording and then start recording. And nobody knew it. But we'll see. Okay. So, Chris, how have you been in the last 7 days?
Keeping very busy.
Yeah?
Work has gone absolutely ballistically mental. it's just really busy at my work at the moment. It's making the days go faster, at least.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, everything's the same for me, you know. It's okay. It's a good job, but sometimes it's monotonous. And it's getting slow, and not too many people are coming in to gamble, so there are days that we just walk around in circles. Okay, hopefully everybody got the host. I don't know. So far, there have been quite a few downloads. Now, what I did is I created a little audio file and put it only on Tech Podcast. It says, hey, you're not getting it. You got to go to TrekMate to get it. And there's been quite a few downloads of that. So I don't know if people missed it or not.
So, Lou, actually, I haven't spoken to you about this yet. But I have received feedback over Twitter about the host.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And in particular, our good friend Mares, Renee Roberts, was very concerned for my health during the host.
What?
Yeah, your voice did seem to go very badly at the end of it.
Oh, really? I don't remember. It's been too long.
I remember feeling pretty bad during that. And I remember, I think when I was summing up, I was, I probably had literally only like two or three sentences left in me that day. It was nice. It was nice for people to be concerned. But I am fine now. Although, to be honest, since we've last spoken to Chris 7 days ago, I've actually picked up something from the kids. Now, these kids are filthy animals to bring in. bringing disease.
Mm-hmm. Imagine that. Okay, then. Let's see. There you go, Chris. Good to have you on again, but here you go. Ready to read.
So the synopsis for tonight's show is, in his latest attempt to understand humanity, Data accepts the affections of Jenna DeSora and pursues a romantic relationship with her. In the meantime, a nebula the Enterprise is passing through is causing strange things to happen on the ship. This is the 25th episode of Season 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is June 3rd, 1991. It was written by Joe Manoski and Ronald D. Moore and directed by Captain Picard himself, Patrick Stewart. Guest stars include Michelle Scarabelli as Jenna DeSora, Rosalind Chow as Keiko O'Brien, Cole Meaney as Miles O'Brien, Pamela Winslow as Ensign McKnight, and special guest star Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan and Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer. So what do we think of this episode? I think it's great fun.
Mm-hmm. Great fun, huh? Yeah. Mm. Okay, what about you, Doc?
So this one was tough, to be honest, because I really relate to Data a lot, and I love Data, and I remember this episode being absolutely fantastic. And I came in here thinking, yeah, it is a great episode, isn't it great? However, I watched it slightly more critically and thought, it's not really that great, is it? And I'm a little bit, I think it was a little bit ploddy in places. I thought that they were potentially, and this is hard for me to say, they were potentially overplaying their Data hand in this episode. This episode shares a lot of similarities to Data's Day, right? And I seem to remember being glowing in my praise for Data's Day, and I'm not entirely sure why I don't quite feel as warmly towards this one. I look forward to our conversation, and I hope I'm not ill.
Okay, I don't think you guys need me, because you don't need two people of the same opinion, so everything the doctor just said, I was thinking the exact same thing. I remember liking this episode in the past. But for some reason today, when I watched it, I'm like, oh, this is actually not that good. Because it, for some reason, I just have a hard time with this whole... I don't know. I guess if I was dating my computer, it might be a... I might have more understanding for it, but the fact that she just in the torpedo room is we'll get to this anyway.
But I'm gonna be very harsh here and claim this story has nothing to do with people dating their computers.
No, except for Data is a computer.
Well,
it's all about people dating people who are socially awkward. And a little bit of a, you know, Star Trek fan at heart. You know, quote-unquote special people. So I don't think it's about computers. I think it's about what you project into Data. And in this episode in particular, I don't project quote-unquote computer or Android into Data. I project other stuff. People that are finding their way in a relationship of which they are clearly not experienced in any way, shape, or form.
He actually developed a program for this experience and was able to just delete it.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's... Okay, maybe I'm just going out on the limb here, but, you know, who hasn't developed a spreadsheet when you're dating in the past?
What? I was going to say, I don't know what you mean by that, but, I mean, yeah, it's fine to, you know, consult. How should I wine and dine her? What's the best? What have you done in the past? But the fact that he actually develops a program and he even uses contractions in this episode. Honey, I'm home. It's just almost like he was just reading word for word what his program is. I don't know. It's hard for me to say. Go on, Chris. You don't want to talk.
Going back to the whole... dating a computer thing. I think it depends how you see Data. I mean, there is an argument that Jenna sees him as a friend and therefore it's nothing to do with computers. But she knows he's an android, so she knows he's not a real boy. So it's kind of, what is she getting out of this? And I think maybe that, like, the episode as a whole shows she only comes to realise that right at the end. So I think, like, there's an argument for this is Data's a sex toy. On the other hand, maybe not.
So the argument I have against sex, there is this bit in the middle where it gets a little bit too much, like, you know, when Data comes back and is very, you know, putting on the pleasantries and is really kind of going out of his way to please her.
Yeah.
There is a bit where you start, you think, well, hang on, this is about 20 seconds away from her being taken care of on the couch. And I didn't think that they wanted to go in that direction, but I did feel slightly uncomfortable that I think the story that they would want to tell is not about the fact, you know, what happens when one person in a relationship is all give, and the other one effectively uses them as a non-person. So I didn't quite see it in that way. I was more looking at it from kind of Data's perspective. There are hints of that there, certainly that sex toy.
I think if we're going to give them credit, they do a good job of steering clear of that.
Yeah, I mean, it could have gone very, very badly wrong.
Well, yeah. I kind of was thinking the only thing it was missing was them waking up the next day. Or him powering up the next day. Or however you want to call it. But you see, no, the thing is...
euphemism.
Yeah, Hey, is my microphone too hot?
Is that a euphemism?
I mean, is my volume too high?
No, you're fine.
Okay, good. No, how do I look at Data? Yes, I do look at it as dating a computer. I kind of agree with Captain Lavoie, who said he's a box on wheels. I mean, just because he has legs and arms, he's not any different than a computer. He's just a walking, talking android. And for her to actually become interested in him, it makes no sense. Another thing here, she was incredibly needy.
Yeah.
Whiny. She was whiny to no end.
Was she? I didn't think she was that bad.
she was quite bad.
Oh,
she was one of these ones that always, like, nothing seems to go quite the way she wants it to go. Like, as if the universe is against her and her relationships.
Yeah. If I was Jeff, I think I would have had a problem with her too. I saw right, Jeff today.
Jeff is a dick.
Yeah, must be.
And I quite like that, the whole using Data to remind her every single time that Jeff, yes, he is a dick, because she appears to be one of these people that keeps getting in a relationship with the wrong person repeatedly.
Yeah. Hey, I'm always in the wrong relationship. Why can't I be somebody would like you? You're perfect. Give me a break.
perhaps we should have had a female perspective on for this episode, just to make sure there's not too much, you know, woman hatred going on, because I didn't think that the woman was that bad at all. I mean, I you know, she managed to get a decent housekeeper out of the relationship, but you know, I thought Data was doing okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously they propped Data up for this one. I mean, because I don't see him. I tell you what, if my computer starts showing romantic interest in me, I'm going to get pretty weirded out by it. I don't see how a computer could even possibly remotely take interest in her without that special programming. He may be fully functional, but
But it's, hang on, let's just step back, because although you say that, you know, she knows that Data's an android, and as a result, you know, why does she kind of initiate this? But from, you know, in real world, or sorry, in the Trek world, you know, that is indeed true. But from a storytelling perspective, it's a story about someone that's inexperienced stepping out into kind of romantic relationships, who has got the skills to have personal relationships. So he does have the skills to be a good friend to this person. And really the story is just telling you about how he comes out and starts taking that next step when he has been, when he has been approached, that it's something that the other party would be interested in. So I don't quite buy the criticism of trying to frame this in terms of kind of, you know, the in-universe story. Because I can see what they're trying to do from the story's perspective, what it's really about.
Huh. Okay. Well, it looks like we have three distinct stories in this episode. First being, of course, Jenna and Data. The second, the Nebula. And the third one would be Miles O'Brien's socks. Half a meter?
Yeah, I'm a Keiko on this one. Miles is a pig.
I mean, what are their quarters going to smell like after that long? Or does he come in several times a day and change his socks?
But do Starfleet issue get like do they get issued regulation socks? Is that kind of like a thing?
Probably not. They probably replicate them every day. I don't know why not. He's probably got 100 replicated pairs.
Maybe.
I mean, half a meter high. We don't know how wide, but we know half a meter high. And not a half a meter. So, anyway. Okay, here we go. As we open up, we see Mr. Data is in the torpedo room with three obvious torpedoes in sight. One that he and Lieutenant Jenna are working on, and the two inside her uniform.
That's highly inappropriate.
It's a good thing Data doesn't get distracted by such things, or, you know, things could really get explosive here.
Maybe it was just me, but she did seem to have a significantly different uniform to Data's. I mean, Data's was obviously the jumper type, like pull over your head, with hers zipped up the front.
Did it?
Yeah. There was a definite split down the middle, as if there was a zip up the top. Is it just me, or are uniforms not supposed to be, well, uniform? this is one of my gripes with Generations as well. That when you get to that movie, there's literally two sets of uniforms.
Hang on.
It's still not as bad as a motion picture. So
Let's just take a minute to talk about generations here. I have spent literally weeks of my own time trying to figure out a way that in-universe it makes sense for half the crew to have one set of uniforms and half the crew to have the other set of uniforms and for certain people to change halfway through. What's going on now? I mean, I don't get it.
But I was all prepared to say they were transitioning from the TNG era ones to the DS9 ones, and they were going to go all that way to basically the Voyager position where they're all in that same uniform.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
If it wasn't for the fact that Picard, at the very end of the movie, is back in a red one again.
Mm. Indeed. But also, if you remember that, isn't Sisko's in the standard uniform? At the beginning of DS9 as well.
Yeah.
Even at the end when he meets up with Picard. So I always assumed the jump uniform was for less formal occasions like DS9. And the reason why, you know, Janeway had her guys in jump uniforms was because she couldn't run a ship properly. That's what I assumed.
I originally thought it was the red, the colours with the black on the sleeves for ships. It was the reverse for space stations, and that's how it seemed to go until you get to Generations, which throws it out the window, and then Voyager goes and just uses the Deep Space Nine equivalent.
Remember, Bashir turns up on TNG in his uniform, and it doesn't make sense. And Riker turns up on DS9 with the correct uniform or the appropriate uniform. Okay, now, the best I can do is that it was dressed down Friday and only half the crew took advantage of it.
That'll do. That suits me. Let's headcanon that, and then we'll just move on.
That makes sense to me,
But you are right, by the way, Chris, in terms of the uniforms, that some people have the jumper style and some people have the zip-up thing style, and I don't know why... I don't know who deserves what. I don't know why people have different uniforms. I assume within the real world it's probably easier to fit one of the uniforms to like the, you know, various sizes of extras or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, possible.
Well,
I mean, I know there was a thing at the kind of start of season 3 where they were still using some of the older ones without the collar from season 1 and 2, just for cost wise. But by this point, that is certainly not the case. She has a collar as well. It's just
it is a new one. By the way, it's very, very unfortunate, and I am going to once again kind of make my some might consider it an illness public, which is that it really bugs me in Best of Both Worlds Part 1. You see one of the season 2/season 1 uniforms running around in the background, because by that point they had almost entirely disappeared. But there's one dude in engineering that is still wearing the old one, and it's and you know, considering that Best of Both Worlds and Best of Both Worlds Part 2 occur on the same day, you know, they have one uniform on the Part 1 and then you never see it again. Until you get to Identity Crisis, where you see it in the flashback.
But do you see him on both uniforms? In both uniforms?
No.
Then he's an on-call person, and all he has is the old style.
Yeah, I always thought in my mind that the reason why you had people with the good uniforms and the non-good uniforms was because, you know, in the first year they upgraded everyone who happened to have a decent performance review, and the schmucks that didn't have the decent performance review, they were left without. Because it's not even just a main cast, non-main cast thing, because people like Barclay end up with the new style before the other guys end up with the main style. Anyway, there's a tangent for you.
That was just to get away from talking about hot torpedoes.
Yeah.
Okay, so... So Jenna's pretty preoccupied because Jeff asked her out to dinner again. So now it's time to remind her for the 6th time what an asshole he is.
Sorry, isn't this still in the teaser?
Yeah.
Yes.
Or is this straight after?
Oh yeah, we're still in the teaser. And it was just all so sweet, you know? Yeah, it looks like Data's becoming the man that Jeff could never be, so to speak. The only problem is, you know, Data will never be the man that Jeff should have been. That's the problem, if you get what I'm getting at.
This is a bit of the episode where Data basically tells her he googled being dumped.
Mm-hmm.
he basically looked it up for how to deal with being dumped, and then he's been helping her out. So he's a good friend, but he's a good friend. This is the chat then.
Yes, he's trying to be a good friend, and she just kind of moves in on him. That's what it seemed like to me. It wasn't a, hey, would you like to go get some coffee or some dinner sometime? It just happened to be they were in 10-4, and she saw Keiko grabbing on Miles, and she decided, oh, mm-hmm. Oh, but anyway, this is kind of where I fall off course, because, you know, like I said, for some reason I liked this episode in the past, but now I just go, maybe it's because I've seen it so many times that I go, ugh. This is becoming monotonous. Just watch her falling for the computer.
I quite like the way it happens, though. There's an obvious thought in her head that, I mean, it's probably telegraphed to the TV audience, but there's a thought process there where she starts to realise that maybe this is the kind of things she should be looking for in a man.
Mm-hmm. But the problem was, Jeff was the kind of thing she was looking for in a man. It's rebound processing.
Yeah.
Get it? Rebound processing.
And to be fair, there is one member of the crew actually warns Data of being the rebound guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Geordi.
Geordi?
Yeah, Geordi basically, and Geordi's floundering. When he's when Data goes to talk to him for advice, Geordi basically but doesn't really do it properly. He warns him about, you don't want to be the rebound guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's another thing that bothered me. You know, going from person to person to person, you know, what should I do? I think you should do it, Data. Oh, she's hot. Go for it. See what it's like. You know, well, how close can I get? Well, that's what I'm hoping you're going to find out. You know, all the way to Worf saying, you touch her and I'll kill you.
I actually thought this part of the episode was great.
Really?
What they've done here is that they basically set up the characters as caricatures of how the fan base now sees them. So he goes to Geordi, and Geordi basically goes, don't ask me, I'm still a virgin. He goes over to Riker. he goes over to Riker, and Riker's there going, oh yeah, get in there. And, you know, he basically goes to Worf, and it's like, you know, I am her dad. I am going to, I'll cut you six ways if you treat her badly.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed this. And then he ends up with Picard, and basically Picard says, no, Data, I'm not involved in this. Shut up.
Yeah, there was even more sort of tones to it. Like, you say Worf is like the dad, but then there's also the Worf Klingon aspect, where he basically just goes, take what you want. Conquer.
Yes, conquer what you want.
But I'm a father, so if you think you're conquering, I'll break you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And even the Picard one, the Picard one is a kind of the usual joke. It's like, yeah, men don't understand women. Ha ha ha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but right there right out in the open of the bridge, I mean, walks down the ramp saying, Captain, I am seeking advice on how to... Yeah, yes, Data. Oh, right, what? Captain, could I see you in the ready room for a second? I mean, right there in front of everybody, putting the captain on the spot, like he's going to say, well, Data, I remember taking somebody to...
I thought that Picard replied too sure that that's what Data was going to ask him about, because I don't think Data mentions the relationship. He merely says, oh, Captain, can I have a word or something like that, and then straight away he gets shot down with yes, I'll be very happy to talk about women if I knew anything about them. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
At which point Data's probably thinking, oh no, I was talking about trying to book some leave next Tuesday.
Yeah.
So, we've skipped over one, actually. I was surprised Guinan kind of stepped back. Guinan was saying, don't ask me, effectively, which is odd. Guinan's usually quite good at giving this kind of advice. Now, he gets the sensible advice from Troi about this isn't just some experiment you're running, this woman has feelings. And I think he had to be told that, because obviously she does have feelings. But Guinan's attitude was just, yeah, I'm not playing. And I was sort of disappointed because Guinan missed my favourite euphemism in this entire episode about how he got a passionate kiss in the torpedo bay.
Yeah, right.
Very good. But is it real? It wasn't the most passionate kiss in the world, right?
It wasn't really. No, it was a pick.
Well, for Data, I mean,
what I can only be.
Yeah, I mean, for Data, it could be. That's why he said could be considered.
No, like, I'm not buying it because he obviously remembers his time with Tasha. That would have been far more passionate.
Well, maybe there was no kissing at all with Tasha. It was... okay. Oh, God, I don't even know where I'm at anymore now. Oh, but anyway, it looks like he might be taking Jeff's place. I would have liked to have met Jeff. Okay, so I would have been more interested maybe if they were in 10 Ford and Jeff came out as the jealous ex-boyfriend. I'll get her back, Commander. I will get her back.
And do you think that Data decks him?
Yeah. Yeah. If you are half the man I am.
I could quite imagine Data sitting down with Jeff and saying, so, what did you do? So that I know what not to do.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
Oh my God,
that's a very good point. You're absolutely right. He should have been consulted. So, Jeff, tell me about your relationship with Lieutenant DeSora. What did you do wrong? I don't want to do that. I'm sorry, James. Go on.
Oh, no, it was just filthy nonsense.
Well, of course I was, but still, you can talk.
Yeah, more filthy nonsense. That's what we need.
That's what this episode's coming down to, so go on.
Oh, no, I have nothing. I have nothing of consequence at this stage.
Oh, the good thing is that when Callgraph Toolbar records, it records in two different tracks. So I'll be able to determine whether that's true or not. And then I'll say, oh, I'll probably take mine out and keep his in. Okay, so anyway. So after
there was one other thing when that occurred to me when they were doing before Data starts doing the tour and the first person he speaks to is basically Geordi. Does that conversation start with Geordi asking if Data forgot to lock the door? It's Data. Why would he forget to lock a door? When Spock's wandering the corridors. It's Data. Why would he wouldn't forget to lock the door.
Oh, that is so true. Yeah. Look who I found. And Worf didn't eat him? Amazing.
I have to say that I have problems with the kind of the B storyline in this episode, in the sense that I just don't believe that it's quite weak, right? Perhaps is what I'm trying to say. I don't believe that it doesn't really stand up. I don't think that somehow they would have magically been able to get the cat out of the door, or if it kind of either opened the door by accident or produced a hole that the cat jumped through. I just don't quite see it. And I would imagine that if this thing is happening randomly, and it's a kind of a line that Riker uses right at the end, I'm certain that they would have kind of tripped something that was absolutely integral to the ship that would have blown the thing up long before they got to the point of being able to notice that a crewman had actually falling through the floor, kind of thing.
They made a joke of it during the meeting, actually. But oh, well, lucky it hasn't gone through the dilithium chamber.
Yeah. But I think it's a proper kind of flaw with the story, and just saying, well, it's a good, almost turn into the camera, Austin Powers like, and saying, and we think you shouldn't worry about it either. It doesn't, it isn't good enough.
Yeah. Well,
I do have a problem with the idea that Spock managed to walk out the door when consider that it should take longer for a cat to walk through a door than it should for a crewman to fall through a floor.
Cats are going to be naturally a little bit cautious as well. It's not going to see this disruption in space time and go, here's my chance, and jump through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah, this is what I've been waiting for all my life. I think part of the anomaly issue that you have, that they couldn't really draw it out because too much time was on about Data and Jenna. The anomaly in concept looked pretty cool. You know, going through this thing, they don't know that they're actually going through it. They don't even realize that it's happening. It's just strange things like, a hypo spray falling on the ground.
And then it starts building up to a woman in the deck. I wish they could have fleshed out the anomaly more and done the data thing less.
It was very subtle for a lot of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think that means that kind of takes away from the drama of it, because all the drama only seems to really happen when you get to the point that, even when they mention, oh, it's a good thing it hasn't been through the warp core or something, it doesn't really seem that real until, did the crew even have a name which fell through the deck plate?
He calls her by her name, whatever that name was. Let me think here. Let's see. Go to the uncredited guest stars. Van Mater, VanMayter, Van Mater. And he does call her by that name as they're going through the corridor. But oh, that's just freaky in the ground. But anyway, here we go. Let's go. Okay, so as I mentioned, other things we learned today, Miles O'Brien has an issue with putting his socks in the right place, and Jenna is able to keep her quarters cleaned. And quite frankly, I was also having trouble forming cogent things to say about it, too. So those are the three things that we learned today. So back in the torpedo bay, Jenna is describing what she's looking for in a man and how Data fits perfectly. And then gives what you have already said was that very passionate kiss. And then we start asking around about it, which we've already discussed.
Yeah, we're all over the place this week.
We are all over the place this week. So,
another thing that occurs to me, did Troy give the advice just to make sure that she didn't have extra work on her own? Yeah, don't you mess this girl up, because I don't want to have to spend the next 6 weeks breaking her back down again.
Putting her back together.
Isn't she incentivized to encourage him to produce a long line of broken, psychologically damaged crew officers that need to come on board and be treated by Troy? I mean, I would have thought it's job security, right?
She's on a ship with old Riker. I'm sure she gets plenty of them.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that's true. She gets plenty of this. Plenty of breakup.
oh, yes.
Upset.
Yes. That's her Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday appointments, is dealing with what Wrecker has done. Okay. But it seems also that she comes around to her senses pretty quick, too, and realizes that maybe dating an iPhone version 6247 might not be the best idea in the world. But she's willing to give it a try anyway. So if he talked to 1% of the crew.
10.
10 people?
Yeah, 10 people.
Then we don't know all of them, do we?
No, he must have spoke to other people, because you only saw about 4 or 5 of them on the screen.
Yeah.
He does say less than 1%.
Less than 1%.
Yeah,
and maybe what happened, he actually talked to Spot, and Spot ran out of the room, and he's too embarrassed to admit that. Anyway. Captain's ready room even seems to suffer a disorder. Things on the floor. I don't know. Like you said, I wish I could have fleshed out more of this anomaly, but it's weak.
The best part of the ready room scene was Worf practically asking a captain if he'd done it. Did you throw a tantrum, Captain?
Yeah.
Did you take a hissy fit?
Yeah. Oh, I can only see your electrical readings, Captain. Is there anything you want to admit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No. Okay. That's fine. That's fine. But if I could post a security guard to sit here and watch you, I'd be a lot more confident. You liar.
Maybe
is it this scene that Worf then suggests they go to Red Alert?
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Because he's scared of a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Also, so a couple of things here, though. I think that in the episode itself, they don't make a good enough effort of making this threat seem important in any way, right? I think at this point, there's a mild mystery, but at no point do we actually feel that this is going to threaten the ship or is even something we need to sort out. You know, it's less of a concern than what the cat's going to have for dinner. And I don't think that's great. I think it would have been better had they tried to have a more, you know, build the tension a little bit more. Then the other thing, though, is that Picard mentions that they've got a poltergeist, and then, you know, Worf kind of goes, "What? Really?" And he gives this impression of someone who doesn't believe in, you know, mythical beings and, you know, an afterlife and stuff like that, despite the fact that he's Worf and he does. So I thought he was being slightly, I think very easily Picard could have said, well, you know, look, you believe in the Klingon rituals and, you know, the gods that were slain by Kahless and stuff, and you're thinking that I'm a bit freaky.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so this planet that they were investigating, one minute it's not there, and you could clearly see out of the on camera that it's not there, and then the next minute it is there. I mean, are they really going to investigate the sensors as to why it didn't detect this planet in the beginning?
It detected it in the beginning. That's why they went there in the first place. And then when they got there, they couldn't see it because something was wrong with the sensors briefly. And then whatever that was fixed, and okay, it was fine.
Yeah, but still, I mean, their eyes could see straight out. I mean, are they seeing sensor images or actual video?
So the view screen is a result of what the sensors pick up. You have to actually go to a window to see out the window.
Oh, see, now I always, this is something that I may learn today. I always thought when they was looking at other things outside of their ship, they actually have cameras on the outside and are looking at them.
No, they use this in other episodes. They've tricked sensor readings into making them think there's more ships than there actually is. And I can't remember what episode it is or even who says it, but somebody says unless they go to a window, they're not going to notice.
Yeah, that's in Peak Performance.
There we go.
I think when Riker suggests he's going to make the shadow of the what is it, the warp, the warbird appear.
Right. Yeah. Huh. Okay.
But you mentioned about they look through cameras on the outside, but fundamentally, what's the difference between a camera and a sensor?
Well, I don't know. I'm just thinking of all those DS9 Dominion fights, those dog fights with all those ships flying around. They sure look like real ships. They don't look like sensor images. I don't know. That's what I always thought.
I don't think there's that much of a distinction, though, between something that you capture on quote-unquote sensors and something you capture on through a visual camera.
Well, because maybe the sensors didn't see this planet, but we're looking at this, looking at this video image of the area in front of us, and there's clearly no planet. And then, poof! Hey, there's a planet there.
Yeah, but all a camera is, right? It's a box, a mechanical box that is designed to pick up a certain part of the electromagnetic spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a way, it is a relatively sophisticated. It's a type of sensor.
Which is a sensor for a particular range of the spectrum.
Yeah. I they've mentioned on numerous occasions, but sensors pick up stuff outside the electromagnetic spectrum, right? So they've picked up, various things like tachyon waves and stuff like that, which are not just light at various frequencies.
Well, here's a way to look at it. If you want to trick a camera, put it in front of a mirror.
Put it what?
Stand behind a mirror, and the camera won't see you. It'll see itself.
No, of course not.
So there's a way to trick a camera.
Okay. What do you guys think of Jenna's gift to Data?
I think the gifts in this entire episode are horrendous. the bunch of flowers that Data gives her earlier on in this episode are just awful. That's the most tame bunch of flowers I've ever seen. If I turned up to put that for my wife, I'd get it thrown back in my face.
I mean, I was surprised that he managed to find a petrol station open on the Enterprise.
I've seen better bouquets of flowers and petrol stations than that one. That was just it was one step up from stealing off my garden. Yeah. In fact, maybe that's what he did. Maybe he went to Keiko's Arboretum and just picked some stuff off that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the weird plastic thing that she gives him is... does she not say something along the lines of it's supposed to brighten up his quarters?
It's Spartan.
How can you brighten something up with a transparent piece of plastic?
It is true. Even if it had been like a big red box or something, it would have been better than this, you know, invisible, weird shaped thing. And also, it doesn't... If she's trying to make his quarters better, this is the type of thing that Data would have chosen himself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I kind of get that impression.
Yeah. To me, it had no sense of purpose. Hmm. Honey, I'm home. Oh my God, so cheesy. And then
he my favorite usage of that line was in Batman Returns. Michelle Pfeiffer turns up and says, "Honey, I'm home." Mm. Oh, I forgot I'm not married. Always make me laugh that one. Actually, there was a bit before before we move on from the other scene in Data's quarters. That whole when a girl tells you to resume or keep doing what you're doing, she means the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, so that I've never understood that rule, but okay, we'll accept that. She then tells him to resume. And he actually goes, okay. And then she goes, no, I mean it this time. So, well, how are you supposed to tell the difference? This is another one of these stereotype things that obviously they played up to. It was okay. Like, if a woman says one thing, she means the opposite, except when she doesn't.
Well, that is true, though. Yeah.
So it goes back to what Picard said earlier about, I don't understand women.
Yeah, that's the only part of this episode that is genuine, is the fact that we don't know what women really want.
No, let me put it on record that I'm perfectly... I know exactly what women want. I think they're the
stud.
Data's played a little bit too naive and stupid in this episode. Even for me.
Yeah.
Because the bit where, you know, the bit when... I think it was when Guinan mentions earlier, he said, oh, don't look at me, and he turns away. And when, when he said, oh, you know, please continue... You know that Data, even if he was talking to someone else out in the open, he wouldn't just continue and behave the way he does. I think they turned Data up to 11, unfortunately, and it slightly regresses the character.
Yeah, there's a bit of season one Data in this.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. Season one Data's back.
Okay, so for example, you know, in Data's day, there'll be instances where he has his internal monologue, and there's a bit where I think Riker says, charming woman, and he goes, oh, yeah. Data, Riker says she's a charming woman, although his inclination makes me think that he didn't exactly mean that. So even at that stage, it's clear that he's understanding a slight nuance and slight tone. And I think he should have been in a much better position to handle this relationship than they portray him as.
Mm-hmm.
In particular when he's in Data's quarters with Jenna.
I would agree to a certain point, but I think in this instance Data's dealing with something he's never dealt with before. He's dealing with a romance, and other than a drunken fumble with Tasha Yar a few years previous, he's not really had to deal with this. So it is going back to basics. He's having to learn how to do these certain things. He's having to go and ask people for advice. He's writing subroutines and what sounds like the geekiest IT chat up line ever. I've wrote a subroutine for you. A program within a program.
Mm-hmm.
How romantic.
How romantic. But then it seems like he intentionally starts a fight with her. I don't know.
It does. Maybe he's accessed the angry sex aspect of the program.
Well, yeah, the makeup stuff, yeah. Maybe there's something wrong with you! Whoa.
Yeah, I didn't like that turn.
It's a good...
That entire scene. It was incredibly creepy of Data to start with.
Yeah, and I think that... So, here's the thing, and this is... You know, do we have anyone that listens that's a woman? I'm not entirely sure, but I'm going to try to go out on a limb here and claim a slighter side on the side of Jenna and think... And this is what I think she would have done if it would have been a real relationship with a robot. You know, the robot comes home, starts acting a little bit weird, starts getting really, really, really quite creepy and trying to, you know, do all of the stuff for you, starts singing ominously as he walks around, and then gets into a shouting match. Mm. I actually would have thrown him out at that point. But instead, well, yeah, but then he you know, he knows that no doesn't mean no, and then he pushes it, and then before long, it's a, oh, Data, let's you know, let's smooch some more, and fade to black. I wouldn't be comfortable in the room with Data after his behavior. No. I don't know why she's expected to be.
Well, again, it comes down to the fact that she understands that he's, what he's trying to do here is learn from other people, effectively. So he's is Googling and is asking advice here, there, and everywhere has led to this point where he thinks, this is what our relationship should be, so I'm going to play it out. And when she figures that bit out, that's when she thinks, okay, I'm going to see what happens if I just kiss him. Mm. And then ask him about the, what were you thinking of then? And I kind of felt for Data here because I mean, thinking of four different things at once, I'm quite capable of thinking of a couple of things at the same time. I'm quite capable of thinking of things when I'm not away from what I'm appeared to be doing. Like, I can be typing on a keyboard and I was thinking about what my lunch is going to be. I mean, how is that any different from I could be kissing someone and thinking about what my latest cat food supplement is going to be?
Well, actually, that's the thing. So, unfortunately, the episode ends, or sorry, the scene ends, where he's listing the things that he's thinking about. And it's like, I'm so glad that I was in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, really? That wasn't the most romantic suggestion. Listen, I'm absolutely certain that nerds throughout the world have attempted to use that as a chat-up line.
Used what?
I was thinking about calculating the maximum pressure I was able to put on your lip.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, every time I kiss my wife, I think of a new food supplement for our dogs.
I could defend it here. He probably does have to think about that because he could quite easily overpower her. So he would have to calculate that maximum pressure.
Do you think it's even possible that maximum pressure on her lips is all Data can concentrate on, one thing at a time? I mean, it would take a millisecond, wasn't it? Yeah, it's a millisecond to determine that, and then what's he going to think about the rest of the time?
Yeah, but the pressure's likely to vary depending on how much she's pressing back.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have to continually calculate that.
And besides, what does he mean by that?
Data can be idle, right? He doesn't have to be working on... Yeah. You know, if Data's working at 100% CPU throughout the day, he's probably only got like 4 hours battery life.
Where does he plug in?
But that's what Jenna's going to find out.
I really did think James was going to make an Android joker.
So you're saying Jenna's his USB port? Oh, no, I don't want to go there. So anyway, back to the anomaly. It's time to leave. There's too many screwy things going on, so let's just go ahead and take off. But like I said, while Geordi and two unimportant crew members try to figure out what's happening, one of them ends up becoming part of the deck. And I gotta tell you, that may be the strangest thing I've ever seen in Star Trek, seeing this woman's body partly in the floor. But how did this happen? Did the floor simply become liquid? She started falling through and then it solidified while she was melting in it?
More or less, yeah. Well, it phased. It wasn't liquid, but it phased to the same way the stuff was falling through tables and that earlier, except in her case, she didn't fall all the way through, so wasn't able to survive. But the question I'd have on this one is, isn't she facing the wrong way? She was walking down that corridor, and when away from Geordi and the other crew member, and when Geordi and the other crew member come out to see what the screen was, she's facing them.
But she probably tried to run away when something happened. Run back, but I would run the way I came. But what I don't go ahead.
Surely she would just have fallen through the floor. She wouldn't have had time to turn around or run away or anything. She just have went straight through, and then I would have, well, she'd have went halfway through. And, yeah,
unless
obviously would solidify it again.
Well, unless the floor crumbling came toward her and she tried to turn around and run away. But what I didn't get is, Is she just part of the floor? I mean, is her body intact as it was in the floor, or is that floor now running through her body? Where's the rest of her? Hanging on the deck down, or what?
I think that she's being crunched into the floor.
Wow.
I would have to wonder if you went to the deck below, would you see her feet?
No, because the decks between are very thick. I think they're thicker than what it would be, but that's a good
thing. Yeah, you're right. It would depend on the thickness. But yeah, I mean,
yeah, because of the gravity. She did have very long legs, Lou.
Mm. She could have, yeah, you know, come down on the deck and you see feet. But what about the guy that's got to scrape her off the floor and then recarpet it?
There's a lot of work he's done in the Enterprise after this episode. That's probably the most horrific bit. I would imagine they had to remove the entire deck plate and replace it.
Yeah, while she's there. Ugh, that's got to be creepy.
Yeah.
And then recarpet it. There. You can hardly tell some woman died there. Good job, Benson. How do you tell this to her family? Yes, Van Mater was an awesome officer all the way up till she melted into the floor. She was walking down the corridor. She screamed, we came, and just the top part of her was, you know, we got to take pictures. I mean, do you think Geordi might have put that on Facebook? Look at this! Click, click, click. You know, taking a few pictures and uploaded it to Snapchat.
No, he's a professional.
Geordi's a professional. maybe not. Okay.
I really can't imagine what they'd be taking selfies with it.
check this out.
Look at me.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, because you can see the blood coming out of her nose, too. Like, that sucks. That had hurt for a while. Okay.
I think that was probably the creepiest aspect, was it just looked like a body. There was no blood. There was just no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
She just looked frozen.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, her left hand is the only thing coming out of the floor, just the hand there. Ugh, creepy. So the way to get out... Go ahead.
I wonder if it's an argument for the fact that because her heart was still above the deck plate, it could still have been pumping blood around, at least to the upper half of her body. Would she have died quickly?
That's a good point. And even so, I mean, maybe she was still, she could still see him, you know. Geordi's staring at her and she could still see. She just obviously can't do anything. She was dying. That was just... yeah, you're right. She's completely still. Not like breathing at all. But, oh, it's just... I'm looking at the image of it. It's just creepy. Oh, that's actually going to be my artwork for this show. You know how on Trekmate you have that picture that you put on? It's going to be of her in the deck. It's just creepy.
There's enough of her body above the deck that... She should still have been functional for a period of time.
Just for a little while. I couldn't, you know, I tell you, I couldn't even tell if that was, if they just put a hole in there, or if that's CGI, or if that's actually her, or is that a mannequin? I couldn't tell for sure. It was pretty good.
It was well done, yeah.
Okay. So anyway, it's time to get out. It's, got to get this Enterprise out. So what do you think about the whole idea of taking a shuttle to get them out?
I like a bit of the theory. I like the idea of getting ahead of the situation, but the differential in size but always bothered me. I mean, it should be very easy to turn a shuttle to avoid these things, and turning the Enterprise should be an absolute nightmare. Well, actually, no. If you want to have proper space physics, then it should be very easy to turn the Enterprise. But because of the way they usually indicate the Enterprise swoops through space, as opposed to just, well, it's the Star Trek physics versus the Babylon 5 physics here. So technically it should be very easy to do, but in practice in Star Trek it wasn't, so I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Were these anomalies moving themselves?
Yeah, they mentioned that, that they were moving themselves, but I mean, sure, that should make it hard as well, because if the shuttle avoids it but it's moving, then it'll be in a different position when the Enterprise meets up with it.
Yeah, that's why I say, if they're moving, the Enterprise is, you know. Doc, what about you? You got anything on that?
Okay, so there are two problems I have with this final scene.
All right.
And this is not the last time that Star Trek does either of these. Okay, the first of all is the idea that the captain has to be one doing this. I have no idea why the captain has to be the one doing this. No. I can only assume it's because the captain hasn't had much to do this episode, and he was directing himself, that he managed to find a way of putting himself into this position. But they always do this. Every now and again, it'll be like a Janeway will say, oh, no, Commander, I have to do this, or no, Tuvok, I'm going to do this myself. There's no need for the captain to do this. And while we're on this subject, I don't believe that the best pilot on the ship is Will Riker. Even if he was the best pilot 20 years ago or 10 years ago, he can't be the best pilot now. There must be a crew the size of the Enterprise should have trained pilots that train day in, day out, that would be better than Will Riker. And I don't like this idea that actually the best pilot must be Will Riker, and if it's not Will Riker, it's probably LaForge. It doesn't make any sense. They're busy, right? You know, I can claim that I'm, you know, I could be the best coder in the world, but if you're not using it day in, day out, you'll find that someone else becomes a lot more experienced than you do and is probably in a better position to do stuff. Mm. So that's my first issue. Second one is that I hate this idea of sending the shuttle out, like, you know, 40 meters ahead of the Enterprise in order to somehow get a better view of things and to be able to make corrections. They use this in Timeless as well. The truth of the matter is that I think the argument that I used at the time is that I don't think you're not realistically going to get much more information from the peak, from the head of the of where the shuttle is back to the Enterprise that quickly. You don't need to do this, and it's very much a kind of dramatic setup that they tried to put out there. And somehow it's supposed to be a little bit cleverer. But I don't buy it, and I've never liked it when they do this. They should, you know, realistically, the issue that they have here is that the B storyline is so weak that they can't just say, well, let's just wander off then and everything will be fine, which is really where we're at. And they say, well, let's just wander off and everything will be fine, but, you know, Picard has to go first in the shuttle, and then the shuttle's going to spin around, and he's going to be beamed aboard, and he's going to be dizzy. Well, that's barely better. And, you know, it helps disguise it somewhat, but I don't think it's that much better.
And then Riker makes a run for it.
Yeah.
With what?
There's a bit at the end where, after the shuttle's been destroyed, thus proving Picard should never have been in charge of the shuttle in the first place. But once they get to that, Riker says they should make a run for it because they're near the edge of the nebula.
Yeah, let's make a run for it.
That could have been really dangerous. What if one of those things passed through the warp core?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. Okay, but Picard's a little beaten, but he made it out of the shuttle just fine. And they get out.
Do you know who the best person in this episode was? Ensign McKnight. She and her keep. She managed to get the Enterprise out of that nebula. Mm-hmm. She doesn't get enough recognition.
Absolutely. She's a cutie, too. Mm-hmm.
Is she?
Oh, yeah. You didn't notice? Yes, you did.
I don't know who we're talking about here.
The woman at the helm.
Ensign McKnight.
I'm actually going to bring it up on the laptop.
Yeah, I'd let her give me a laptop.
So she's the blonde one?
Yeah.
Yeah, Pamela Winslow. She was actually mentioned in the credits, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, she's not bad.
Oh, sorry, Lou. Last episode, did I have enough time to talk about the fact that why on earth is a shuttle pod so small that you physically can't get into it unless you're kind of placed in and carried in at a weird angle? I have no idea how this was ever thought of as a reasonable shuttle. I just kind of clicking around and you see a glimpse of it. what the hell were they thinking? It's just so stupid.
And then on the opposite end, you had the Delta Flyer, which seems to have three decks or something. I don't know. But yeah,
you're right.
It is the world's stupidest show.
It just, I don't know. It looked like it's all engine except for those two little spots up front.
Yeah, there's just nowhere to hide in it whatsoever. Where's the toilet? What if you're stuck in that shuttle for any length of time whatsoever? There's a bucket, isn't there? There must be a bucket or something. There's something out of just below camera that we can't see.
And here's another question. We already know that it wasn't in the future, so it had to be in the past where Picard was taking a shuttlecraft ride with Crusher to get his new heart. And he was going for some testing. And there was a back area to the shuttle. Once you know you've got one that big that can be more comfortable, why would you keep these things?
You wouldn't. You just, unless you were using it for very short spaces of time to do things, that, like go out and fix the ship, maybe.
Mm. Yeah. Guide the ship through an anomaly, I guess. That's the only thing it's good for.
It's exactly the right shuttle for this very scenario. Mm.
And they come a dime a dozen, which is why they go through so many of them.
Well, there's not much to them. It's easy to build a new one.
It's easy, yeah. Okay. Well, I guess the thing is over. The anomaly's gone. The emergency's over. Now there's only one thing to do, and that's break up with Data.
Yeah, I think we should talk. Does that phrase ever end well?
No. I think we need to talk. Oh, okay. Why don't we hop in bed and we'll talk? At some point. I mean, do you think that she even got to see how functional he was?
No. She didn't, because we know from First Contact that the length of time between First Contact and the date that Data tells the Borg Queen, since he was last able to show how fully functional he is, goes back to the fumble with Tasha Yar. So there was never any sexual contact in this relationship.
Well, she missed out then. Oh, well. And, you know, the good thing is Data's quarters are much less Spartan now.
Yeah, he's put a bit of effort in, which is good.
What do you think he did? I can't wait to see his quarters next time. Back to Spartan.
Yeah, they went with the subroutine.
Yeah. So, we are not a couple. No, we're not. I really don't think we ever were. Do you think Data has bad breath?
No.
Does he have breath?
Yeah, he breathes.
He does. He breathes. Because, well, Brent Spiner breathes, and as a result, he needs to breathe.
Yeah, but technically Data mimics breathing. That doesn't necessarily mean he breathes.
Yeah, in the same way he mimics getting old and putting on like 60 pounds, right?
yeah, that's right. He does that.
But do you think that when, you know, next time when Data's going to be like thrown out of Starfleet, or he's going to be like, you know, taken into a quarter to prove his individuality again, do you think he's going to end up there having packed that little vase-y thing that Jenna gave him? Or do you think from his perspective, this relationship's, you know, that's already been sent over to the recycling replicator bin?
Well, I don't see it in the breakup scene.
He threw it there a lot before the portable cup.
She walked out. He's like, screw this. This is ugly. I can't put this here. You know, Spot's going to walk on it. It's going to crash, break, shatter. Or maybe Spot did knock it down. Good spot. Okay. But anyway, so it's time to go on, delete the appropriate program, and she'll go find the next one within the next 6 hours.
You know how I just referenced First Contact with the whole, how long has it been? There's another aspect of First Contact where Picard says to Data, you should probably shut off your emotion chip, and he does so, and then he says, Data, sometimes I really envy you. I think this is about where I envy Data. So shall I delete the appropriate program? Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, done.
Done.
And it's that easy. There must be relationships I've had to still worry about, and I've been married a good few years now.
Mm-hmm.
And is there not an episode of Voyager where Tom Paris is talking to, is it the Doctor, where he says like it could be years later and like there'll be a smell or a sound or something like that, which will take you back to the day she broke your heart? That kind of thing. That obviously doesn't affect Data whatsoever, so yeah, I'm jealous of Data.
I don't know, maybe just because he deleted it doesn't mean it got totally deleted. Nothing in Star Trek in their computers, when you delete something, gets totally deleted. Somebody can always bring it back.
The thing that I was a little bit concerned about here, or the thing from Jenna's perspective, is that clearly Data has excess storage, right? He doesn't need to delete it immediately. I mean, he might defragment his disk later down the line, but he doesn't need to delete it now in front of her and audibly. And it's a little rude that he does.
Right.
I mean, how big was the program? The program was probably only about a couple of meg or so. So it's I think it's really petty, and I think it's really spiteful for him to do this in front of her.
Right.
And then, yeah, but there's no way he realizes that.
Yeah. And what's the last thing we see just after he deletes the program? Spot. Spot's climbing up his leg saying, thank God that bitch is gone. I think her and Spot probably would have gotten along very well.
Yeah, that's the... I don't know if I want to say this. That's the only pussy that Data's going to get in this episode.
Yeah, I think so.
That was just there for the taking, sorry.
Absolutely. You're right. And then he's petting Spot, I wonder how many computations he went through to see how much pressure he can apply to Spot's neck. Good thing he didn't delete that program, huh? Spot would be that.
We're going to need another Spot.
Sorry, Spot. Well, we do get another Spot. But
I was reading that on Memory Alpha. This is the last time that Spot is this breed of cat.
Yeah.
They changed the breed after this.
He probably did kill Spot accidentally and figured nobody would notice to name the next one Spot. I mean, where did he even get Spot? Replicated? is there an animal shelter on the ship? Or Spot on the animal on the ship?
Why would there be an animal shelter? I can't imagine there's an animal shelter on this ship.
I don't know. Oh my God.
I mean,
there's children on the ship.
There are children on the ship. Yeah,
I'm thinking if you know how it goes, if there's children on the ship, they want a puppy for Christmas. Yeah. They'll get a puppy for Christmas, and a new year it has to go to the ship's animal shelter because they don't want to look after the puppy anymore.
Yeah, is there a pet store?
So actually, for a second there, I thought you were going to suggest there's an orphanage on the ship.
Maybe there will be. Have we had that episode yet? Well, there's kids with their parents get killed in the line of duty. That happens in a couple of episodes, doesn't it? There's one that takes the Data, and
There are many, right? So yeah. we've had the bonding. When he takes
Worf. To
that's the one where he does take to Worf, and then there's imaginary friend, and then there's the other one with the hero worship, where he pretends to be Data. So actually, there seem to be a lot of common patterns here in these Star Trek episodes. Mm-hmm.
And there are
imaginary friend. Is that one that's actually about death for a parent? I don't think that's about a death for a parent, because the father's still there. It just happens to be an imaginary friend where a creature turns up and takes the form of the imaginary friend.
Right.
Okay. Well, she must have been some screwed up child then. I can't remember what exactly pushed her over the edge.
Who?
Isn't that a quite famous actress, by the way, that was in TNG as that girl?
Imaginary friend?
Yeah.
Let me go back and take a look.
Don't think so. I know the girl that played the one that had the imaginary friend turned up in a few things around about the kind of early 90s. But and then she was in an episode of Deep Space Nine as well. But the other girl that actually played the imaginary friend, I'm not sure. There's something ringing a bell about that.
Something else.
there is something about her that she went on and did something else that was more famous than this episode.
Hmm.
It was Clara and Isabella, wasn't it?
Imaginary friend. Just trying to see what we gave that for ratings.
It's not on. It hasn't been on yet. Has it?
No, it's the first season episode, Imaginary Friend.
It was the first...
I'm getting...
Yeah, no.
Getting worried here.
I'm starting to...
End of season 5.
Oh, okay. Oh, so no, we haven't gotten there. Oh, okay. No. And believe it or not, nobody's taken it either.
It's not very good.
Yeah, imagine that. Okay. All right, so I guess this is it. We're done. Data had a 12-hour relationship. Oh, and what was Jenna? Was she an engineer or a security officer?
She was a security officer.
Okay. That makes sense. Because, I mean, I guess that would... She would be working on a torpedo in security.
Okay. No, she'd be some sort of weapons specialist or something, I would have thought. Which is why she comes under the tactical branch and why she's Worf's her boss.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think she's security.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So he's got other people, security and weapons.
Maybe Alpha West is a security system specialist.
So while we were talking, the girl who played Clara Sutter was Nolie Thornton.
Yep.
And Shay Astor played Isabella, so I don't know either of them, what they may have gone on to.
No, wouldn't recognize them with their passports.
Nope.
So I have no idea who they are.
No. You know, I've never went to the airport and said, Shay? Shay, is that you? Don't freak me out, please. All right, that's that. Well, and it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. I don't know what I could compare it to. A summer's day. Chris, how about you?
This isn't some data with this period. Shall I compare you to a summer's day?
Yeah. Chris, start it out. Tell us what you thought, your final thoughts in your...
Okay, so when we started this podcast, I said this was good fun. I stand by that comment because I did quite enjoy it. I have to agree with James that the rest of the B plot is just tame and not a lot happens for most of the episode, and that kind of ruins the drama towards the end of it. But the main focus of it was Data coming to terms with the idea of having a romantic relationship. I thought they examined it quite well. There's some good funny moments. There's some absolutely creepy moments as well. But it was a good journey for Data's character to go on, even if there was a bit of regression to kind of Erwell. But as I said, I think that's acceptable given he's doing something he hasn't really done before. So I would was quite happy I'd watch this episode again and again, and that's always a good sign. So I would say this is probably, it's not a 5, I wouldn't go that far, but I would give it 4 out of 5.
Okay, 4 out of 5. And I don't know, I might be a little more down than James, so I'll go next. For me, I thought it was kind of stupid. For the most part, it's kind of dumb. I don't like the buildup of the relationship that just crashed and burned within a few hours of its beginning. And I guess it's nice to see the writers wondering what would happen if a girl became interested in Data. But it could never work. And I think that's the only real part of it. It just could never work. I don't know how he could sustain a relationship. Not, you know, if she really even wants one. He was just rebound processing, like I said. She'd have to take a really advanced computer programming course to try and figure out how to relate to Data. Or manipulate him. But, Jenna, we are no longer. So, goodbye. Deleting the appropriate program Chris, you touched on that, saying that, boy, you wish you could do that. So do I. But no such thing. The anomaly they went through was barely interesting because they didn't have time to flush it out. They were more interested in the data Jenna thing than the anomaly. All in all, it's pretty weak. I can only give it a 2 at best. It's not Shades of Grey bad, but it's pretty bad. So I'm going for a 2. James, how about you?
What? That's ridiculous.
You think it should be 1?
No. I mean, come on. I didn't say it was the greatest episode in the world, and I thought it was slightly disappointing compared to my recollection. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even so, it's not getting the 2. I think that we've had a lot of fun this episode discussing it. I disagree, by the way, with Data not being able to have a relationship. I think Data can have a relationship. I really do see a lot of myself in Data, or a lot of Data in myself is probably more accurate. Mm. And I do like this story about, you know, even those of us that are emotionally incontinent can have relationships with people. I actually enjoy this episode for the Dataisms. I think they go overboard with the Dataisms. I think they regress Data somewhat. I think they have various attempts at humor that don't quite work. I think the B plot line is terrible and doesn't really go anywhere. But it's still enjoyable Trek. I mean, I'm siding much more with Chris than with you on this one, Lou. Mm-hmm. I have previously enjoyed this episode so much that despite it being slightly slightly less exciting this time around, I'm still going to come in and give it a 4 out of 5.
Hmm.
I think this is fine, and it's a very kind of a, you know, very mild episode just to finish off the season.
Okay, then.
At what point do I get ejected from this podcast for being stupidly ridiculous with my ratings?
That ain't gonna happen. Somewhere in the next 10 years, we're gonna have to determine, are we actually going to do the animated series?
I would be an apologist for that too.
Have you not?
Really? No, never seen.
So this is the thing that cracks me up about people in Trek, mate, actually. We're all Star Trek fans, and yet there's Star Trek out there you've never watched. We haven't had real Star Trek new stuff for like 10 years now. And you haven't watched Star Trek. It's the same with Fur Bob and Ten Forward. How can you go for months without watching Star Trek Beyond? The whole idea of new Star Trek is just ridiculously exciting to me. I don't understand how you can't go, oh, I'm going to go watch it, I've never seen it.
I'll watch it. But I mean, I've seen a few of the cartoons. They were just stupid. The animated.
Okay,
they're not as bad as people make out. Some of the storylines are a bit silly, but they're good fun. They're obviously targeted at a younger audience, but there's still that good interaction between the crew.
I mean, to be completely fair, I think for me, I haven't watched them because I've just never got around to buying them, and I usually won't watch anything unless I buy it. I'm one of those people. I like to be able to play things on disc properly. I know that they've actually redone the original the animated series on Blu-ray. So yeah. Here's the irony for you. You'll get the animated series on Blu-ray.
Oh,
you
don't
get
PS9
on Blu-ray. But yeah, I'd be very, very keen to watch. I did watch when did it come? What was this with? It was... What on earth? It's on the original series. That's right. So on the original series Blu-ray disc, they have like an episode of Trouble with Tribbles. So in the second season, when they have the Trouble with Tribbles, they also put onto the Blu-ray Trials and Tribulations, the DS9 episode, and then More Troubles, More Tribbles, or whatever the episode is.
Oh, yeah, the animated
from
one.
The original series, from the animated series. So I have watched that one. And I thought it was, you know, it's fine.
That was good. That was quite good. I think that's because that one's done by, was it David Gerald as well?
Actually, I think it's the same writer, right?
I think that's why it works quite well.
Hmm. Okay.
Anyway, so yes, we are going to do the animated series, Lou.
Oh. Okay. Hold on.
Next season.
Okay. Oh, and I did look a little further into those two girls that you were thinking of. Both of them were in Quantum Leap. And the one...
That's a very bad way to start the sentence there. Mm. I was looking into more of those two girls you were thinking about.
Well, you said they go on to other things. I know they go on to a Quantum Leap. But one of them actually is on Voyager as Taya. No, not Voyager. DS9 as Taya on that one Shadow play.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That's a good episode.
The holographic village.
Yeah.
I liked it too. Okay, so, all right, everyone. So, here we are, the end of season 4.
A young cadet captures Data's affection.
No. Hold on just a second here. This is Lou, and I'm alone. And I just got to point out, a young cadet, how can a lieutenant be a young cadet? Anyway, let's continue.
Well, then it seems the next move is yours.
But I am not capable of love.
And now he's determined to pursue a romantic affair at any price.
I think you should be careful.
There are always risks of getting hurt.
Will Data finally achieve the passions of human emotion?
What's wrong with you tonight?
Perhaps there is something wrong with you!
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
So join us next time as we review... Episode 26 of Season 4, the season finale called Redemption. And I'm hoping to have Brian on. I know I've said a couple times that we were going to have somebody on, and sure enough, we have somebody different because, you know, conflicts happen. So, everyone... Oh, Chris, thank you for coming on again.
It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Let's see what I have you for here. Unification, Part 1 and Part 2.
Fantastic.
And you were scheduled with the guest, but I got a feeling you'll be scheduled alone, as it were. Just like this one.
Oh, that's fine. That's okay.
All right, then.
We did quite well, the three of us.
You got it. So everyone take care and good night. Go carefully.
You what?
Go carefully. You know, that's coming up in a season.
You know what else is coming up in season 5? Conundrum.
No. Conundrum's good.
Oh, yeah. I love Conundrum.
That's not from Conundrum.
No, I know. I'm just thinking thinking ahead to what's coming up in season 5. And
sorry, Lou. I actually don't know what it's from. You've stumped me.
It's confused me, too.
The Inner Light.
Yeah, I was about to say, is it from The Inner Light?
Yeah.
Go careful, is it?
Yeah. Okay, so here's the thing that's going to get me thrown off the podcast.
God.
You're trying your best,
innit? Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not convinced that The Inner Light is as good as what people think it is.
Oh, man.
There you go.
Oh, man. We got 26 episodes before we have that dogfight.
I'm not sure. I think people say, hey, it's the best ever. And I think, no, it's not the best ever.
No, it's a really, really good episode, but it's not the best ever.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, but it is a very good one. There are a couple that might be better. And I guess when we get to the end of season 7, and we have to really brainstorm and consider, you know, our top 10 or top 20 or something of TNG, we got to rank them at some point.
All 180 of them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's going to be very difficult. So, well,
what we should do, we should get our list of like 5-star episodes. Now for you, Lou, that might be like 10 or 15, and for me, it'll be like 52 or so.
And 122 for the guests. Yeah.
Yeah. And then with those, we should then, you know, select the top 10 and rank them and defend them.
Mm-hmm.
Or you should get Ben on for that one. Because he'll have a list of 178.
I don't know if this is even going to be possible with Skype. I don't know how many you can have on, but I was thinking maybe we should get some of the few of the people that have been with us over these years all together at one time to give their ranking of their top
10 or something.
Hey, Luke, we can have a call-in show. We can call people in, have a chat, hang them up.
Yeah, you know, that's funny, but we've done that on the Lou Trek show. We, you know, we don't know what to talk about, and I see somebody's online, so let's just go and drag them in. And we've dragged people in before. That was fun. You know, they had no idea it was coming, and hey, you're on the show now. Let's talk about it. It was good. It was fun. It's something that Brian and I have to get back into, and I keep saying that, but I don't know. All right. Okay, so anyway, right now,
there's going to be a lot of 5 stars in season 5. And I'm just looking at some of the episodes that are in there. It's a brilliant season.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the strongest in Star Trek, I think.
Okay. Well, everyone, as it is right now, Ensign Row is still available. So that's the first open one.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. And then the next open one is New Ground. So start looking at the list. It's on there. It's on the truck.
Hang on. Isn't Ensign Row like episode 2?
3.
3.
Well, when you consider the two-part, second part of Redemption, if you don't consider that an episode, but it could be.
So what's the one after Redemption?
A Dunlop.
And Jalad.
At Tanagra.
At Tanagra.
See, I mean, what a brilliant episode that is.
Yeah, and that's supposed to be Sean, and we haven't talked to Sean in a long time, so we'll see.
A Canadian friend.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that he's building a wall to keep you guys out.
Yeah, and
he's making you pay for
it. Yeah, we're going to have to pay for it. I ain't got the money for a wall. All right, guys. You all have a good night. It's time for family night tonight.
Ooh, sounds good. It's time for bed just a bit for me.
That's right. It is time for bed for you. But since I got this crazy job with these crazy hours, I hardly have any time with my family, so we dedicate one day, one night a week to actually family time. And bedtime isn't for about 5 hours for us, so.
Yeah.
So, well, do you watch Star Trek during family time?
No.
No.
No, but my wife did like The Inner Light. I will say that. She doesn't like TNG. I don't know. I almost want to leave her. You know, maybe there's something wrong with you. But, yeah. But she already said, she might come on when we go into Voyager. She might come on and do a little bit of guest appearances on some of her favorite Voyager. She loves Voyager. But anyway. All right, go to bed, guys. Good night.
Okay, thank you.
Chris, before I go, can I make one request?
Uh-huh.
There's no feedback post for Cupid. I've had a list of notes to put a Cupid feedback for weeks, and I keep going on to see if it's been added yet, and there isn't anything in the forum.
There was no forum?
No. I don't know what happened to Cupid. It went missing.
Oh.
The podcast was there. There's just no thread in the forum.
Oh, well, we got to solve that. I'll do that right now for you.
Cupid's, isn't that like 6 months ago?
Yeah, well,
it was a few weeks ago now, yeah.
Yeah, it was quite a while ago, but, you know, it was only six episodes ago. But, yeah, okay, I'll get you something so you can leave your thoughts tomorrow. Not tonight, too tired.
Yeah, my notes are on my work laptop anyway. So.
Yeah, if you try and do it tonight, we'll get 2 paragraphs at best. All right, we'll see you guys.
Right.
Good night.
Okay, thanks, guys. Bye, everyone. Bye.